Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we've got a lot to go through. We've got a pretty big update on the EV tax credit, some initial guidance from the Treasury Department and the IRS. We've also got a leaked email from Elon Musk, and we'll go through Q4 production and delivery forecasts ahead of that report, which we expect on, I believe, on Monday. Of course, we'll also talk about the stock. Great day for Tesla today, up 8.1%. Definitely feels good. Closing at $121.82, which feels a lot better on the way up than on the way down. The NASDAQ also with a strong day today, up 2.6%. We did have really high volume again today, another 220 million shares traded or so. So depending on how after hours shakes out, we'll be pretty close to the record for this year that was set yesterday. So two green days, two record volume days for the last year at least, which is nice to see. Hopefully, you know, hopefully indicating a bottom, but you know, we'll find out as we head into next year. And of course, the Q4 delivery and production report will influence that pretty heavily. A couple of quick things on the stock. So we did have just an interesting liked tweet here from Elon Musk. So Holmar is tweeting out last night or yesterday morning, Tesla is hilariously undervalued. Elon did like this tweet. So again, for what it's worth, I know people have different feelings on Elon's commentary right now, but I would say that is an indication of something, especially when we have seen Elon talk in the past about how, you know, Tesla is overvalued or the stock price is too high during periods of time, things like that. So I think that's a positive sign to see that. And then we did also have a leaked email from Elon Musk. This went to employees, I believe yesterday. I guess this tweet was actually 2 days ago, but I think Elon just recently liked that. Anyway, this went out last night to Tesla employees or sometime yesterday, from Elon to everyone on the Tesla team. Just a quick note to say thank you for your hard work and congratulate you on an exceptional execution in 2022. Since we have a lot of cars arriving at the last minute, it is important to rally hard and do everything we can to get our cars to customers who have ordered them before midnight on December 31st. Also, every incremental car we produce that can be delivered in time also matters. Please go all out for the next few days and volunteer to help if at all possible. It will make a real difference. Thanks, Elon. By the way, don't be too bothered by stock market craziness. As we demonstrate continued excellent performance, the market will recognize that. Long term, I believe very much that Tesla will be the most valuable company on Earth. So, again, positive signs from Elon. He continues to talk about where he views Tesla's value going for over the long term. Obviously, he views it as a rocky period right now as markets maybe heading into, or the economy heading into more of a recessionary period of time, which we'll see on, but still very confident in that long-term value. So, positive things to see that. We also got an update from Alex Potter today on the on his analysis on Tesla. He is still maintaining an overweight rating on Tesla, a $340 price target. So unlike a lot of other analysts that have sort of followed the stock down with their price targets, Alex is holding strong at 340. He says that, you know, we do not believe that Tesla's market share is suddenly succumbing to a wave of new competition, and we do not believe anything has changed with the long-term thesis. So you may have seen me tweet that out earlier today, but that's really the essence of the note here. And then as Alex tends to do, shared some graphs on things like market share and stuff like that. So nice to have some of that reiteration and a little bit of a different message than some of the other messages we have seen recently from some other analysts. The other thing you may have seen on the stock today, there was an article from Barron's talking about how Elon Musk could be getting margin called or something like that. I think they probably updated the headline here at some point because this was a little bit misleading and widely spread, but of course, as we've talked about many times, the initial Twitter bid had included $12.5 billion of, or maybe it was $6.5, I can't remember how the exact split there was, but had a margin line for Elon, and this article was just basically saying if that was fully utilized based on where the stock dipped to, then Elon would be potentially facing a margin call at these levels, or the levels that we had yesterday. But that was not the structure of the eventual deal, so really not too relevant. And unfortunately, quite misleading. Obviously, Elon said, you know, a few days ago that he has no intention of selling, and if he was on the verge of a margin call, I don't think he would go out there on a Twitter space and say definitely not selling, because obviously that would be a risk at that period of time. All right, getting into the EV credit. So we finally have some guidance here, not full guidance, as remember they are going to wait until March to issue guidance on the battery components and minerals criteria, but in the interim period, they have now, the IRS has now listed vehicles that will be eligible for the new electric vehicle credit starting on January 1st. So we now kind of have a more firm answer on what's going to happen during that period of time where it's where there is no final guidance on the battery components in terms of the qualifications that those meet. So in the interim, it does seem like all of these vehicles are going to be eligible. So if we go down to Tesla here, we've got the Model 3 listed. Interestingly, the performance is missing here, but the Model 3 rear-wheel drive, long range are both listed. And then they list a number of different variants for the Model Y. So all-wheel drive 7-seat, long range 7-seat, performance 7-seat, and then the same thing in 5-seat variants. So it's interesting that they have to separate these, and as you'll notice here on the applicable MSRP limit, for some reason, the 7-seat is qualifying as an SUV and gets that $80,000 cap, and the two-row version, 5-seat version, is classified into the other bucket, sedans or other vehicles, and only meets the $55,000 cap for MSRP. So, as if these caps were not already frustrating enough, I've talked about how dumb of a setup that is in the first place, because it creates all these weird incentives for manufacturers to be near those price points, which, you know, just let the market do its job and determine the price itself. But now we get another variant thrown in here where apparently adding two tiny seats in the back somehow converts the vehicle, the exact same vehicle, literally the exact same vehicle, into an SUV from something else. Oh man, so frustrating. But here we can see that this is even more frustrating if we look at some of the other vehicles that this is being applied to. So we've got the Volkswagen ID.4, and same situation here. Some trims, it looks like for this vehicle, the non-all-wheel drive trims are 55,000. Then you add all-wheel drive, and then the cap goes up to 80,000. So how that's different from the Model Y, where you've got an all-wheel drive version here at 55,000, I do not know. And then we go up here, and we look at the Ford Escape, a plug-in hybrid, mind you. Remember, that did make it in, despite it not making any sense. That did make it in. It gets an $80,000 cap as well. Both of these vehicles, the ID.4 Pro and the Escape plug-in hybrid, 5 seats. What's the difference with the Model Y with 5 seats? Has all-wheel drive? I do not know. If we look at some help here from ChatGPT making its first appearance on Tesla Daily, probably more to come, but I just ask it to build a table here comparing the size and weight of these vehicles and the seating capacity. And you know, you can see Model Y is a bigger vehicle, and I did double check these, they should be pretty close. Model Y is a bigger vehicle than both of these vehicles. It weighs more and it has more seating capacity, and yet not eligible. So, or not eligible at the higher price, $55,000 cap for the 5-seat variant. So pretty frustrating, doesn't make a lot of sense. And you know, there are positives in terms of it being eligible. Obviously, that's a win. We kind of expected that. And it should be eligible for that full credit, at least under these price points, at least until March, when we get more information on the battery components and minerals criteria or materials criteria. So, you know, it's not all negative, and this certainly will help boost Tesla sales, but they're going to have to do some interesting things here with their trim lineup and pricing and things like that. So, you know, I'm disappointed with the structure in general, just as an American citizen, but, you know, I guess it is what it is. We'll see if any of this changes. Maybe in March, they'll make some changes to this to make it make more sense. So, we'll see on that. And then they did have a couple of other updates here. This was just kind of highlighting that until a new proposed guidance is issued in March, the new clean vehicle credit will continue to be determined on the vehicle's battery capacity, and the other criteria. So just kind of highlighting that they should be eligible for that $7,500 on January 1st until we get, you know, new guidance. And then there's also something interesting here. The U.S. Treasury has said that consumer leases can qualify for EV tax credit on a commercial basis, the commercial clean vehicle tax credit there, which is something we probably should have spent more time on. But the current structure, as I understand it, of the Inflation Reduction Act allows for a commercial clean vehicle tax credit for vehicles without having to qualify for the battery components and materials requirements. So essentially, foreign-made EVs should be eligible for those credits without having, or maybe not foreign-made, but not as strict of requirements on the battery stuff as the consumer credit. However, they're now saying that consumer leases qualify for that consumer credit. So it's sort of like a a bit of a compromise between the exclusion of foreign processes or foreign materials that we had some pushback from companies like, you know, Hyundai and things like that, and just the, you know, more domestic focused version. So I think it's just a little bit of compromise in there, but definitely interesting. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of these leases to make vehicles eligible for this credit. So we'll have to do a little bit more research and see exactly how some of that stuff is applying. And this is part of a white paper here too, just with, you know, a lot of different things that they're outlining for the criteria in March. So we'll have a lot more to dig into on that in the future. All right, let's flip over to Excel here now, and let's go through Q4 delivery and production estimates. As I said, we expect this report probably on Monday morning, January 2nd, as long as I've got my dates right there. And yeah, I won't bury the lead here. So just to go through production, I am at about 450,100 vehicles here this quarter. So most of you, I think, are familiar with the spreadsheet by now. I won't go through the whole detail of how this is set up, but we can see here Shanghai, we kind of already know October and November from the CPCA reports. So those are combining to 176,000. I do have December production slowing down. Of course, we've had that report of the stoppage from sometime around the 25th to the end of the year. So that's going to take a chunk out. And then I'm also subtracting, you know, 10% or so, 10 to 15% of the production from around December 11th through that stoppage, based on the reporting that we had about the shift of downsizing. So that's getting me roughly to 63,000 vehicles or so for December. There's, you know, a reasonable chance that that's off based on that first chunk. You know, I think we're pretty solid on the downtime here for the last week, but we don't know as much about the, you know, that interim period from, you know, early to mid-December through the stoppage. So we'll see on that, but that puts me at 63,000, which gets me to about 240,000 out of Shanghai. Berlin and Texas. So we'll start off with Texas. On October 30th, I believe, we had a tweet from Tesla indicating that they had just surpassed 20,000 vehicles produced at Giga Texas life to date. So based on my previous forecast, I had them at about 12,000 from that factory going into Q4. That would have put us then at 8,000 for October. And then, of course, we know that Tesla just tweeted that they were hitting 3,000 per week here at the end of December. So basically just, you know, somewhat linearly ramping that up throughout the months of the quarter. And that's putting me at around 30,750 vehicles. So obviously somewhere in between 2,000 to 3,000 for the quarter, which I think makes sense. Maybe it's a little bit higher, maybe a little bit lower, but something in that ballpark. And then I'm pretty much similar for Berlin. We know that Berlin hit the 3,000 number a little bit later. Berlin's also had the Quicksilver and Midnight Cherry production. You know, we're still waiting, I think, on Midnight Cherry, but introducing those may have slowed production a little bit there too as well. So the number there for Berlin is a little bit smaller, but between the two, I'm at about 61,000 from those. And then for Fremont, I'm just shy of 150,000, basically just applying a small percentage increase to what I assume Model 3 and Model Y production would have been last quarter, which if I scroll over here, you can kind of see that. So basically just assuming a small increase there. I would love if we do see an even more drastic increase, and I think that's possible from Fremont based on some of the reporting that we'd had about Tesla sending in Giga Shanghai employees to kind of optimize that factory. Hopefully that yields some immediate results. I'm expecting that maybe that takes a little bit more time, and with that process, maybe there was some downtime there as well, but hopefully we see some pretty strong numbers out of Fremont. And then of course we should continue to see Model S and X ramping too. So that should add another, you know, 2,500 vehicles or so. And we do have, I think, one extra day in the quarter here in Q4 compared to Q3. So putting all of those together, it gets me to about 450,000. I think we could have been, you know, 470,000 or so without, I guess, if Fremont or if Shanghai had been going at full blast the whole quarter. But that's where I'm at. That would be up 23% quarter over quarter. Huge growth. We did have that production downtime for the upgrade in Q3, though. And then year over year, probably the most important number, up 47%. So incredibly healthy growth in production, even with this small little downtime here in December in China. As for deliveries, I hesitate to even give a delivery number here because, I don't have a lot of confidence in it, and people always go out and make these comparison charts of who's getting closest and things like that. And I'm not doing a bottoms up process here. I'm doing the same process as I have done in past quarters, basically just taking where my production estimate is, which is always what I care most about, and then just kind of trying to assess how inventory will shift off of that number. So I'm basically, it's not a great way of forecasting because it's compounding my error off of whatever the production error inevitably will be. But anyway, I'm at 434,000. I think the consensus right now is around 422,000, but the consensus has dropped recently. So the street number might be a little bit lower, like the true expectation. But I'm at 300 or 434,000. That has inventory growing by 16,000. Something to consider there is that we do have the last 2 quarters an increase of 4,000 vehicles in inventory in Q2, and then of course last quarter with the unwinding the wave sort of beginning according to Tesla had about 21 or 22,000 vehicles there added to inventory last quarter. So to add another 16,000 on here, it might seem like a lot on top of that because presumably the vehicles that you have this quarter, should be delivered, or the extra inventory that built this quarter should be delivered right away at the start of the quarter. So that needs to factor into what the inventory change is going to be for this quarter. However, my logic here is kind of based on days of inventory. So if we look at actual days of inventory as Tesla reports it on their quarterly earnings, Q3 was 8 days of inventory. Even adding 16,000 vehicles here, that would only move Tesla up to 9 days of inventory. So I'm basically adding an extra day, assuming that there's, a little bit more unwinding. We know that Tesla is exporting some vehicles, or it looks like Tesla's exporting some vehicles from China here at the end of the quarter. Obviously, those won't be delivered. Again, that's going to be offset to an extent by these Q3 vehicles that were in transit. But at the same time, I just think that the guidance from Tesla has kind of been, hey, we're unwinding the wave. We should be expecting inventory to grow. So for me to, not model an increase in inventory doesn't make, I don't think, a lot of sense. So again, I don't have a ton of confidence in this number. If you do those charts, feel free to exclude me because probably just end up making me look bad. But that's kind of where I'm at and kind of the logic that I'm thinking. I really wouldn't be surprised with a pretty huge range on this, plus or minus, I guess, anywhere from 400 to 450,000. I don't think it's going to be too surprising to me. So yeah, we'll see how that comes in, but that is where I'm at. On the inventory front, just a couple of things to note. In addition to that inventory carry-in that we talked about, production is down the last week, or we think that production is down for the last week of the quarter in Shanghai. So that's going to have an impact where Tesla probably still delivering some vehicles during that period of time, but not producing them from their most productive factory. So that should be a tailwind for inventory reduction. If we're looking for that, so that could be something that could drive this lower. And then we also have this, added $7,500 discount from Tesla, which seems to have really been effective in terms of clearing out inventory in the United States. So with those two things, again, that's why I think there's such a range and why this sort of tops down starting from production analysis isn't really great for this quarter. Those two things could be, pretty significant factors that drive a lower inventory increase, or I don't think it's impossible to see an inventory reduction because of these carry-in vehicles. I think we're probably having like 15,000 being exported that aren't going to get delivered from Shanghai here in the last couple of weeks. So that could be offset there, and the rest could sell. So we'll see. But hopefully that kind of gives people some context, at least on what I'm thinking. All right, let's hop back to the browser here, and just one other thing to cover quickly. And that is a Twitter thread from Tesla today, just kind of recapping their year. So I thought this would be a great way to end it, as this will be the last episode of Tesla Daily this year. I am in the process of moving right now. If you guys could see that side of my apartment, there are a lot of boxes. So in the process of moving, going to be finishing that up tomorrow. So won't have the availability to do an episode tomorrow, and this will again be the last one for the year, and we'll catch you when the delivery and production report comes out. That being said, Tesla here recapping the year, talking about the expansion of the Supercharger network now in all 50 states, 40,000 Superchargers, of course, opened up the pilot program to non-Tesla EVs, started building Model Y deliveries from Berlin and Texas, published our third impact report, Model 3 and Model Y ranked as the most American-made vehicles, somehow overlooked by American government, unfortunately. Model Y and Model S received 5 stars and the highest overall weighted safety rating in the Euro NCAP under the current protocol, which is the new protocol. Shipped 87 new major features and 11 over-the-air software updates, made our 2 millionth vehicle at the factories in Fremont and Nevada, launched Plaid Track Mode for maximum fun and zoomies, hosted our second AI Day, and introduced TeslaBot to the world, launched 2 new colors from Berlin, opened our mega factory, which will hit a production capacity of 10,000 megapacks per year, which I think is that 40,000 gigawatt target, roughly. I don't think Tesla's at that rate yet. I know there's a lot of megapack excitement on Tesla Twitter right now, and for good reason, but I think they're just talking about capacity there, and then delivered first Tesla semis. North American charging standard, launched Tesla Electric in Texas. We've talked about those things. Continued to ramp, hitting 3,000 per week at Texas and Berlin, 500,000 solar panels and solar roof installations. And here's a big one that is new information. Enabled anyone in North America who has purchased FSD to request FSD beta, reaching 285,000 cars in total. So the last couple of updates that we had on that was 100,000, 160,000, now 285,000. And as we head into Q4 earnings, I think this means that we should expect a pretty significant chunk of revenue recognition from FSD beta for Q4. Achieved a record output of 4680 cells. We talked about that last week or earlier this week, and then broke the Beetle's 1969 record for most cars sold in Norway. Tesla says to be continued in 2023. So again, I think that's a great place to wrap it up for today, and I guess for the year. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you, I guess, on Monday for the January 2nd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.